Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, July 6, 2014. My name is Leah, and I'm your moderator this morning. And the share ID for Friday, July 4th, is 6609. That's 6609. This morning, A Vision for You presents, We Found the Great Reality Deep Down Within Us. Powerless. That is the conclusion of step one. Inside of our own skin, our body, our mind, our will, we have no effective power with respect to our binge foods or binge eating behaviors. We have no choice. The mental obsession condemns us to compulsively overeat when we don't want to. And the phenomenon of craving condemns us to continue compulsively overeating once we start. And even when we're not compulsively overeating, our life is unmanageable. Our effort, our desires, our energy, our wish, and even our necessities have not delivered the hoped-for results. We are restless, irritable, and discontent. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. In fact, they failed utterly. Lack of power is the dilemma. We have to find a power other than ourselves. The 12 steps are a specific method for producing this spiritual awakening, this personal transformation. And these results give us freedom from the bondage of food. We are changed in the way we think. We are changed in the way we feel. And especially, we are changed in the way we behave. And what distinguishes the 12-step process from self-help programs is that this change is done to us, not by us. Here to speak on We Found the Great Reality Deep Down Within Us is Stacy W. Stacy resides from Union Grove, Wisconsin. She is a recovered compulsive overeater and eager to carry the message of recovery to us this morning. And welcome and thank you, Stacy W.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I'm from Wisconsin, and I'm actually in Texas sharing this message this morning. I'm here visiting my sister and my niece is one that I've never met before, and that's definitely a result of the program. With that, I will get started. I want to start with a little story that I've heard in my sharing or my experience of listening to speakers and my reading. And it so describes what Leah just spoke about, that we found the great reality deep down within. And that's been my experience. She asked me to choose a title for my talk, and that was the one that has spoke the most to me this past year of my journey, because I've looked everywhere other than within me, and that's where the great reality and the answer always has been. So the reading goes like this. A beggar had been sitting by the side of the road for over 30 years. One day, a stranger walked by. "Spare some change," mumbled the beggar, mechanically holding out his old baseball cap. "I have nothing to give you," said the stranger. Then he asked, "What's that you're sitting on?" "Oh, nothing," replied the beggar, "just an old box. I've been sitting on it for as long as I can remember." "Ever looked inside?" asked the stranger. "No," said the beggar. "What's the point? There's nothing in here. I've been sitting here for 30 years. "Have a look inside," said the stranger. The beggar managed to pry open the lid. With astonishment, disbelief, and elation, he saw that the box was filled with gold. And I love this story because that's how I feel, that a vision for you, and they're the strangers and my sponsor that I found were the strangers that through the book and through the steps brought me to a relationship with my higher power, which was inside of me. You know, I'd been holding on to this for so many years, but it was covered by so much, by pomp, calamity, by worship of other things. It had just been covered and covered by so many things. And I've been taught and helped to uncover those things, to tap into that resource. So with that, my abstinence date is June 2013, and I cannot give you a specific date because I just was that foggy when I came in. So last June sometime, I took my last bite of abstinent or non-abstinent food. I took my last bite of my binge foods. I actually came into OA for the last time, or for the first time last February. I had not found a book studying meeting yet at the time, and a lot of the people I was sitting in meetings with were regularly, and I was among them, just kind of eating our binge foods and joining together, and then we would kind of pat each other on the back and say, it's going to be okay. And the last time that I binged, which was June of last year, I basically went to my favorite fast food restaurant down the road from my house, and it had been a couple of months since I had eaten that substance, and it affected me so quickly because I hadn't had it in so long, and I basically passed out on the couch and was pretty much like drooling, and I was with the kids, and they were a little alarmed. I don't want to say scared, they're teenagers, but they were a little alarmed at how weird I was acting, and I was so stoned on sugar. That was my last bout. Before I came in though, I'm jumping ahead. Let me just start from the beginning. So it's been a year, and basically the way that I have managed to hold on to that abstinence through the past year is by hooking up with a sponsor through a vision for you, who I found, and she's been my tour guide. She guided me through these steps, enabled me to have a spiritual awakening and establish a relationship with my higher power. I should just inform you all that I have been in another recovery 12-step program for many, many years, and I never had met a sponsor or sponsored in such a way where I was just brought through the book. My experience was, and I did this as well as sponsoring, I would maybe try to counsel, I would try to do everything that I wasn't prepared to do. I would try to, I wanted a sponsor to maybe try and fix me, to tell me what to do about my marriage, to tell me what to do about my kids, to maybe just talk about my problems. I didn't really want the solution. So when I found the sponsor, I was ready and desperate enough to just go through these steps in a rapid pace to recover. And it worked. I can tell you, before not going through the book at in a rapid pace and through the steps, I did not get recovery I was searching for. You get the results that you put into it. And so I often tell people that I don't believe that my current sponsor even knew my husband's name for quite a while, or how many kids I have. And the reason I share that is because it didn't matter. It did not matter as much as I believed for all these years that it mattered, that she knows everything about me and she knows how I feel about everything. It didn't matter. She was there to guide me to the solution in the book, and it has reaped results tenfold that I could ever imagine. We have a different relationship now where I share definitely far more and we go back and forth. But initially going through those steps at a rapid pace was, it was a matter of life and death. So I have a sponsor, and again, you know, and also on top of that, it wasn't her job to tell me this is how many meetings you go to, and this is exactly how you need, what food plan you have. Again, the key point, and the key point of this book is to establish a relationship with a higher power that would solve my problem. So where I started, you know, there are some experiences as a child that I don't know that they made me a compulsive overeater. I used to try to think that and blame that for many years, that it was because of my mom that I'm the way I am, and that kept me trapped for quite a long time. But there's some experiences that I had that certainly contributed to me going to how I used food, to how I ate. It was definitely my solution. It was definitely my comfort. I just remember a few things as a child that I remember getting caught, you know, and some of these may just be child things, because I know I have kids who I don't believe are compulsive overeaters, and I mean, we like to sneak things, but I'd be in the, my mom would make Christmas cookies, and I would be up in the attic where she'd keep them to stay cool, and I would be sneak in there in the middle of the night, and I would just kind of devour, but then I'd go back, and I'd get more, and she'd always wonder, where did they all go? I remember, and here's where the shame already started around my food. She had this like baking cabinet, and she had caramel bars and kind of things she'd use for baking. And I would break off pieces of that when I could. And she always thought we had mice, and I obviously knew better, but I would never correct her. You know, I just let her think we had mice. At a very young age, I was sent to Weight Watchers. And again, you know, I used that for a long time as I was so shamed. But when I was sent to Weight Watchers, I don't know that that's, well, I know that that's not what made me a compulsive overeater, but I know that those were things I used, you know, to eat over, to continue to feel, and I didn't know how to deal with that shame either, it was piling up and piling up. And so that experience there, feeling different, I didn't know anyone around me who, my friends weren't in Weight Watchers. My friends, weren't it sent there, and so I was, you know, starting to feel different. I remember a boy in middle school, that another one of those compounding moments in my mind that determined whether I was going to keep on eating or not. You could have gone one way or the other, I suppose, was I liked this boy in middle school, and he said, "She's cute, but she's a little overweight." And I will never, ever forget that. I've inventoried it since, but you can guarantee that when that a boy says that to you when you're 12 years old and you have to inventory it when you're 40, you're probably a compulsive overeater or an addict of some sort. Let's see. My mom definitely, again, I don't know the heredity or the how this, it's in your genes or anything. I just know that this did run in my family. You know, I don't have a lot of memory of, I know my mom would definitely, she would go on like fudge buying binges and sugar buying binges. And like I said, I met my sister this weekend and she has a lot more memory than I do, but she would work out like a maniac. And then my mom would just work out like a maniac. And she actually passed away in my middle 20s. So about 15 years ago. It was about 13 years ago this year, from overdosing on fen-phen. So my mom, too, definitely struggled with the compulsive overeating part and then the trying to manage it part and this lack of a higher power, trying to fulfill that hole with something. And we all have it, you know, trying to fulfill it with food, exercise, anything other than what we're meant to fill it with. And again, therein lies when my mom died was a lot of fear that I'm going to end up just like that. Then a lot of determination. I refuse to end up like that. I don't know how to not end up like that. So it is with deep gratitude that I sit here. She was 46 when she died, and I'm 40 today, and it is with deep, deep gratitude that I'm going into my 40s with being recovered, and it is with deep gratitude. So I had mentioned that I was in this, I've been in another program for many, many years, and in that I'm 11 years sober now. And so that means I've been sponsoring women for all these years. And the reason I say that is, so this whole time I've been using food and it increasingly started to get worse and worse. For a while, I kind of thought I have a problem with sugar, you know, and I would read the sugar addicts books, and as we have read in our book, I've tried everything ad nauseum, and tried it again because truthfully in my mind, coming to OA was the absolute last option. In my mind, and I believed in everyone else's mind, that if I surrendered this fight, then I was a complete loser. Then I had completely failed because you see, I saw so many people winning this battle, and they could manage, they could abstain, they could use their willpower, and they didn't. What was wrong with me? But I kept having this inkling that I have something internally that I do not react the same way, but I still wouldn't surrender to OA. So I sat in the meetings as well that I was attending, and we were using the book, and I would try to apply it myself without coming to OA, and it still just wasn't working. I really needed that identifying in aspect that I get from talking with other compulsive overeaters. So I had this idea for a long, long time, and I had tried many, many other avenues. Just some examples of the unmanageability of my using. I remember going through, I've been married prior, and I was going through my first divorce, and I mean, that was my solution. I had a good idea. I mean, I kind of had it somewhat right. I knew where to search. Like, I always was drawn to the lake. We live in Wisconsin, where I live. We live by a big, vast, beautiful lake. We live by Lake Michigan, and one of my favorite places to go and is to look out upon that lake or any body of water. I get a lot of peace. as I was going through my divorce, I would go to the lake, but I also would stop at Walgreens on the way and buy like $10-$15 worth of like candy. And that is how I coped with my divorce, going through it. That's how I would make my decisions. As I was saying a few minutes ago, and I was sponsoring women in this other program under this cloud of sugar and of my deluded thinking. That's how I was functioning, making decisions, parenting, just constantly under this veil of sugar, and I don't know, because that was my drug of no choice. It was the one that I went to get my, you know, when I needed to feel better at the end of the day, that is what I came home to, and I couldn't get it in fast enough. And when I needed to cope with life, I couldn't get it in fast enough. Towards the end, the bitter end, there's a couple of stories that are not as, they're pretty ugly. My kids, this is, actually isn't even near the end. This was, oh gosh, I mean, we're talking a good 8 to 10 years ago. My kids had a kitten, and it was a brand new baby kitten. And I've never shared this story before, so and I'll tell you, I prayed as I've been taught to pray, as along with my meditating before I spoke this morning, I prayed, your words, my voice. So I'm just sharing with you what God wants me to share today. So my kids had this kitten, and it was brand new, and you know, I was doing my coping with life by binging, and what that would mean is a lot of the time I would pass out, just like an alcoholic. You know, I would pass out stone cold. I mean, and I'm sure many of you know what I'm talking about, in this drug stupid state. And I would wake up lethargic and hungover. And I remember one particular day. Along with the dysfunction of everything else, I mean, I was dysfunctional at home, and I didn't know how to put my kids to bed at a reasonable time or put them in their own beds. I mean, we all kind of like, for a long, long time, we slept out in the living room together. I mean, it just was dysfunction. It's not the way that it's supposed to go, at least to have a peaceful life. It was pretty chaotic and crazy. Anyway, I went to work on one particular day, and my daughter called me hysterical in the afternoon that she had found the cat in this tiny little kitten, like probably the size of my hand, had been squished underneath one of the couch cushions. And I share this story because I did that. I did that because of my I did that, and it's a sad story, and I hate sharing it, but I need to share that because I did that because of my compulsive overeating, and that was a consequence. And I think my kids kind of like, they poo-poo it, and they're gentle on me, and they don't want me to feel terrible that mommy really didn't, it was an accident, but I know that it was because I was in such a sugar doped up state that I didn't wake up. I was so passed out. Another thing that I've done multiple times, as I've tried to manage my compulsive overeating, is I took laxatives for a long, long time. And I work in a professional setting, just as many of us do, and there have been several times where I had not made it to the restroom. Talk about demoralizing behavior, demoralizing ways to try and control my eating, control the way that I, just to control this disease. I mean, I have gone to the extreme to try and I'll tell you what, that didn't happen once. It happened many times. You know, I had to eat, and so in order to compromise for my binge, I had to use that solution because that's the only solution I had. And I've had to call coworkers from the bathroom multiple times and say, "Can you help me?" Demoralizing, absolutely demoralizing. That is not a picture of grace and dignity, I can tell you that. So the good news, the good news is I came into OA last February after finally driving home one night. Me and my husband had, it ended up that we had a free night, and I had my last binge planned. I had driven out and got my favorite apple pie in a bag. I mean, the thing that could get me into the coma the quickest, you know, that could just like a shot right in my veins. And I had that, and I had, of course, I didn't just have that. I had a couple of more things, and I had it in my car, and I was driving home, and I didn't think my husband was going to be home, but he happened to surprise me that he had a free night, and he showed up, and I was so mad. He ruined my plan. I ended up sending him away, and I went in, and I had my relationship with my true love, and it was right around this time, too, I believe, that it was a time that I was choking, literally choking, because I was eating while I was driving, and I couldn't stop. I was still choking, but I was still shoving it in. I was, like, coughing and shoveling food in at the same time, because I wanted that effect so badly. So the very next day after I had my husband away is when I surrendered. I said, "This isn't working for me anymore. I am going to die. I'm going to die. I wanted to kill myself. I felt so hopeless. I needed to seek help." So I did go to my first meeting the very next day. As I'd shared earlier, I didn't meet up with a book study meeting for my first few months, but of June of last year, I started on the steps, and you know, right away, I identified in that I had both. I had the obsession of the mind, and I had the allergy of the body. I had to identify that, and I knew. And in order to become abstinent, I needed to identify what my binge foods were for me. And for me, I needed to write those down. And I'll tell you what, in the beginning, I heard a long time ago that that my binge foods, when I came in, my list of things I could eat was big. And my list of my binge foods was small. I can tell you a year later, that's flipped. And I can tell you that scared me to death in the beginning. A year ago, I'm like, "Oh my God, food is my savior. Food is what I go to." And it has flipped, and it's a good thing, I promise. There was a saying I heard in the beginning, "How free do you want to be?" And as I've gone through the past year, I've encountered different things that have either I've tried to get an effect from or have given me an effect that I didn't anticipate. So I've had to add them to my list. And as I'm fighting those things in my mind, I have to say, "Okay, how free do you want to be?" And they go on the list. What I eat now is very, very, it's very small in comparison to before. And I thought that what is that? That's not freedom. You know, that freedom is being able to eat whatever I want, whenever I want. I really believed that. But I'm realizing that freedom, that is not freedom. Freedom is being able to freedom is not having the food run my life. Freedom is actually being so fulfilled in life and in God that, oh my gosh, I forgot to eat breakfast. Wait till that happens. That's freedom. That's amazing. So we worked through, I started working with my sponsor. You know, I got through to when I'm going through in my mind here, when I got up to step three, I remember her saying, was I ready to basically to go on with the rest of these steps? Did I believe that there possibly was something greater than me, that I was willing to stop making my own decisions and to keep moving forward? And I remember specifically saying to her, I absolutely believe there is. I don't believe I'm walking hand in hand with it, him, her, or anything right now. And she told me that that was okay. I just needed to have an open mind. That was a huge relief for me. I remember that distinctly. I always thought I needed to come to this with a relationship with my higher power already, and that held me back for a long time, because we are not coming here cleaned up, you guys. We are not coming here all pretty. We are coming here blood, sweat, and tears, and just a mess, and that was okay, coming here a complete mess. We moved on to the inventory process, and I was encouraged to write down everything, and I did, and it tells us in the book, for good reason, to be thorough and honest. And I wrote down every single time that I had every fear, and that is the benefit I reaped from being that honest. The freedom, again, that how free do you want to be? Writing down, you know, when I'm working with my sponsees now, they're like, well, do I need to write down this? I'm like, just write it down. Just write it down. You know, if you question it, just write it down. Because I just found so much freedom in writing out just the silliest ones to me that in logically I would think are silly are, you know, how I'm resentful at the PTA moms at my son's school. But man, those women, I gave them so much power, and not writing them down because I thought it sounded petty was killing me. So I needed to write every single one down. You know, I'm going to touch a little bit more on 6 and 7 as I wrap up, because I've recently been practicing 6 and 7 quite a bit. So I'm going to just jump over here to the amends process then. And let me just say that this all occurred, these steps, going through the steps, occurred probably in, I'd say, maybe 2.5 months. And that pace worked for me to make that spiritual experience happen. It's like I remember hearing somewhere from a speaker that we're in a race. We are in a race to get through these amends to save our lives. Once we start, the steps, it's a matter of life and death. And then when we get through our amends, then it's still definitely a matter of life and death on a daily basis. But to get through to 9, it's a race. It's not a slow and tedious, well, I'm going to maybe do my inventory and do those next year when I feel more ready, or I'm going to make a few of these amends now and make a few later. No, I found that it's vital and crucial and a matter of life and death. And so which then brings me again to 8 and 9, what I was talking about. You know, it's been very important for me to do, it says all, not a few, all. And as I mentioned, I'd been in the program prior to OA, and I didn't do all, you know. There's words in this book that are meant to mean what they say, and the word all and every and must, there's a lot of those in this book. It's a book of suggestions, but it basically you can, and I've heard it been said that it's also suggested that you pull the chute on your parachute when you jump out of an airplane. That's also suggested, but if you don't do it, it's likely that you're going to suffer severe consequences. And so there's a lot of words in the book that are suggested, but they're here to save our lives. And so yes, when I got to the amends, it's been imperative that I'm doing all of my amends and making all of them. And I had some amazing, amazing experiences with amends. One of them was just that I didn't even think was important. It was, or not important, but I didn't think, it was to an ex-boyfriend from 20 years ago. And I thought, I am going to reach out to this guy and he is going to think I am so nuts because he's not even going to remember me. And in fact, he was so grateful. He literally had been carrying that around with him this whole time because it harmed him. It scarred him and it harmed him. And he was so grateful and relieved that I cleared some things up for him in the way he was looking at things. So we just don't know. We have no idea. There's been other ones where I thought that it was going to go, I was far more important than I really was, where they just were like, eh, it wasn't a big deal. I mean, so my perceptions of myself are often skewed. But we, with the help of a sponsor, you know, we worked through, I worked through some scripts of what I was going to say. I didn't go through all of the scripts because after a while, you know, I had now established a relationship with a higher power, and I knew. But there were some of the major difficult ones that I ran through the wording with her. So I wanted to make sure that I was asking them, what is there anything else that I don't know that they needed to share with me and what I could do to make it right. The amends process was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my life. For anyone out there who's afraid of that, it's something you don't want to miss. Which then brings me to 10 and 11, and 10 and 11 have been amazing and detrimental. I did not realize or learn how detrimental they were up until this past couple of months, actually. I decided to branch out career-wise and to make some changes, and my meditation and prayer world got rocked quite a bit. And there's a reading in the 12 and 12, the AA 12 and 12, where it talks about after we make regular use of such things, we wouldn't do without them any more than we would food and water or something. I'm probably not quoting it exactly, but basically you get the gist of it that we... And I always read that, and I thought, I don't know, that's a bit much. And after I had been doing prayer and meditation for a while, and this past month when my timing, it kind of just got, I stopped doing it in the way that I was doing it, I can tell you it is true. I felt like my soul was just being depleted. I missed prayer and meditation so much, like I was missing air and water. And I made changes to go back to, I went back to the way things were before I made the career changes, because that was my top reason, was that my prayer and meditation life was affected so greatly. And I would have never believed that. So I that experience among it showed me so many things among many other, and then it kind of leads me to what I was sharing, wanted to share about 6 and 7, and actually all of them. I in those decisions that I made in the past couple of months, and this is kind of applying all of the steps currently in my life. So I was just sharing how I made direct amends, and I've never really faced things. I've always been a runner, right? We go and we cause a bunch of chaos and havoc, and then I'm just either going to quit that job, or I'm going to just leave that marriage or that relationship, and then we then learn that we go back and make amends. But I've never maybe caused some things, not maliciously or not intentionally, but maybe some things by circumstance. People get hurt. Like first day I have to leave a job, and there's another person there who got hurt by that, and she gets greatly affected. I've never had to stay and face it and be dignified and handle it with dignity and grace. I've never had to do that. And so this has been a great experience recently of me having to be honest, to say this isn't working, to handle it, looking people straight in the eye, not to duck and dodge. That has been a huge, huge experience. The other part of that is I have to return now to a job that I wasn't the greatest at for a very long time. I was stoned 99% of the time. I was very careless and lazy, and I'm going back there now. So the first thing that my boss that I'm going back there said is, you know, there's been some rumblings that your cases aren't up to par. And I, because of this program and a God of my understanding, was able to just go, you're right, you know, and my intent is to come back and establish a new reputation and to be an asset to you and to my fellows. And I never knew how to do that before. So this has just been such an incredible experience. I'm here, like I said in the beginning, I'm here in Texas visiting with my sister, and there's been a couple of uncomfortable situations, as we all understand. And in the past, one time years ago, I flew back early because I was so uncomfortable. That's the kind of chaos and harm I would cause. I just duck and run. This is uncomfortable. I need to run. But I've been taught to see where I can be of service. She has two little children, and there's not an opportunity to be of service there. You know, it gets uncomfortable, and I have many tools that I can utilize today, whereas a year ago, I had none. And I encourage each and every one of you, this can happen. It can happen for you. I promise you, I guarantee you, a year ago, I never in a million years thought that I'd be sharing this story with you. I was hopeless. I was determined. I was doomed to die the same way as my mom, and I don't see that future anymore. I do live. I do pack into the stream of life today, and I try on a daily basis to see where I can be a help to others and to ask for help in correcting the areas where I'm wrong, because believe me, those are there every day, you know, every single day. I'm not flying on a spiritual plane, but I just keep on trying. So that is all I have.
Stacy, thank you so much for sharing your story of transformation with us. And, of course, that transformation is the result of these 12 steps. Thank you so much. We're going to offer Stacy's contact information at the conclusion of this recording, so hang on for that. And at this time, we welcome any questions you might have for Stacy. And you can direct your questions to her by pressing star 1 to unmute. Who has a question for Stacy this morning?
Good morning. This is Santa.
Hi, Santa. Go ahead.
Good morning, Stacy. Thank you so much for your share this morning. My name is Santa from New Jersey, a newly recovered compulsive overeater. And my question for you is, can you share with us more about how quickly you actually went through the steps with your step guide? Specifically, can you please give me the time frame that it took from start to finish, the meeting times that you had with your guide as to how often you met with each other? And also, what is those meeting times like after you have done the steps? Thank you.
Sure. My experience and the way that I also try to sponsor now is, I can't give you an exact timeline as far as going through them, just because there's so many different variables when you have conflicts of schedule, but I can give you a general guideline. I mean, just that what we tried to do 3 times a week for a half an hour. And that's what I tried to do with people I sponsor. And that got me, I would call her. We'd schedule 3 phone calls a week, 30 minutes apiece. And that got me, and it's been my experience sponsoring too, that gets us through to the 9th step in a good couple of months, I'd say. I'd say for sure 2.5, that gets us to the 9th step. And then you asked how often. I use a lot of other spiritual guides and spiritual mentors. And so that's going to be different for a lot of different people and a lot of different in your experience and your sponsor. I text with my sponsor quite frequently, but I talk with her, I'd say, once a month. But again, that's going to be a case-by-case basis because I have a lot of other, it's just, you're going to come up, that's something that her and I have come up with. And I have sponsees that I talk with weekly, and I have sponsees that I talk with once every couple of weeks as needed, and it's just a case-by-case basis. But I do talk with her for sure at least once a month, and then we text also. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Santa. Who's next? Star 1 to unmute.
This is Rasha from Minnesota. I have a question.
Go ahead, Rasha.
Hi, Stacy. Thank you so much for your share, and I'm grateful that you got the message to share about the kitten. I know that must have been very hard for you, and those are the kind of things that we need to hear. We need to be reminded of how far addiction can take us and the awful things that happen. So thank you for that. My question is regarding the amends that you made to the former boyfriend. I was wondering if you'd just be willing to share a little more detail about that, about what was surprising and how he was holding on to it. Would really appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. The thing that was surprising is just, I think, how we minimize how much we affect people. That the story in itself isn't that exciting. I was drunk and cheated on him and I broke his heart, you know, and that was pretty much the end of the relationship. And I needed to amend that. I've never amended that. And so when I, and again, it was 20 years later, we were just young kids, and I figured he's married now. He's got a beautiful family. He's happy. He does not want to hear from me. And in over the years, we had contact through Facebook or seeing each other. So we knew, and we were friends actually on the social media sites, but I'd never directly made an amends. And so we knew that the other was out there, and it was just a casual, hi, how are you kind of thing. But I had no idea how much, we just don't know how much our selfishness affects other people. And I think that's what was so impactful about that one, is that I minimized it so much to think that it wasn't, I don't affect people as much as I do. And so when he came back and was so grateful that I had cleared up some of those ideas, that, you know, he thought it was him, and he all these years he'd been holding on to, that he thought it was his fault, and he needed to hear that this was me, and I needed to clear that up, and that gave him freedom. And I'm going to tell you, that was so powerful. So powerful how God works in those, and we do these steps to allow him to work. You know, it's when we this is how we tap into that, by allowing God to work through us. And that was a very powerful one.
Thank you, Rasha, for that question. Anyone else? Star one to unmute.
Yes, I have a question.
Yes, your name, please.
My name is Patty.
Patty, go ahead. Thank you.
You said you were in another 12-step program, and I'm also in another 12-step program and have been for about 20 years. And I was wondering, did you work the 12 steps in that program?
That's a very good question. I did. But it just, I don't know, it's a good question, but I don't really know how to answer it, honestly, because I don't know if I just wasn't desperate enough yet to hold, you know, to take in all that the big book was offering until I hit a bottom with food. I just don't really know why. I don't know why. It was certainly offered. The solution was certainly offered in my other 12-step program. I just never worked through the steps and had a spiritual awakening the way I did this past year with going through it with OA. And again, I don't know if that's just because I needed to hit that bottom with food. I can tell you that it has increased and just been an obviously such an asset to my other program. I mean, I don't work nearly the same program or sponsor the same way I did. So it's been all around beneficial for both programs.
Thank you, Patty, for the question. Anyone else?
Good morning. This is Nan.
Hi, Nan. Your turn. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. It's Sherry, right?
Oh, it's Stacy.
Stacy. Oh, I'm sorry, Stacy. I'm doing the fourth step, and I'm on the fourth step, and I was having a little difficulty with the fear inventory. Can you talk about that at all, a little bit?
Can you give me more of a, like?
I'm having trouble coming up with, you know, the fears that I obviously carry around. Yeah.
Sure. I have a great understanding of that, actually. I remember when I did my first inventory, and this wasn't the one I did last year, but it, like, the things that I wrote down were, I'm afraid of snakes. I'm afraid of heights. Things like that. Very obvious fears. And those, not to say that they can't go on an inventory now, but what I've learned is that I'm really afraid of far more than snakes and heights. I'm afraid to get out of bed in the morning. I mean, fear runs my life when I'm not doing this. I was afraid of everyone I encountered. I was afraid you knew who I was inside. I was afraid you hated me as much as I do. I was afraid you knew what I did. I was afraid that you were going to get the promotion and I wasn't. I was afraid I was going to get the promotion. And then what do I do? Always just terrified I wasn't good enough. A good barometer, if when I was doing an inventory, when you're walking around throughout the day and you see someone or you're in a situation and you get that little twinge in your gut, if you can pay attention to that, write that name down, that situation down. There's a lot of people that would, you know, I'd get this like, whether that was a resentment or that was a fear, I was like ashamed of something or somehow I'd get that feeling, write that name down. That might be a good place to start. If you pay attention, I think you'll feel that. You'll feel that feeling and you'll go, oh, okay, that was a fear.
Oh, thank you very much, Stacy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nan, for the question.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Hi, this is Alexis Mancher.
Let's start again. I didn't catch those names specifically.
This is Alexis Mancher.
Alexis. And who else with a question?
My name is Nisha, and I'm from Minnesota.
Okay, let's start with Alexis, please, your question.
Hi, I'm Alexis in Maryland, and I want to thank you so much for your share. I could identify with a lot, and my question is, you mentioned, the list of foods that were clear you needed to abstain from, and that list has grown, and I was just wondering, I know that we were, you know, beyond the food and the emotional havoc of the living experience and all that, but as you've discovered foods that are, that you don't have freedom from, as you put it that way, and you add them to your list, if there's sort of anything extra you do to sort of acknowledge that, has that happened in the course of working through the steps, and do you go back to step one in any form? I hope my question is clear. Thank you.
Yes, I do acknowledge them. I've either acknowledged them, like there's been certain things where I've realized, oh yeah, this is now I'm, you know, my sponsor pointed out to me that in step 10, it says that our next function is to grow in understanding. And, I've just become more and more honest and aware. And, there are things that I, not that they just, not, there are things that I'm just doing now that are more healthy for me because God just, my God just wants me to be a more healthy human being. You know, maybe they weren't problematic and they may not be problematic for someone else, but I've eliminated things that just aren't good for me either. But then as there are definitely things that have come up that perhaps I'm going, yeah, this is just something that I need to eliminate. And then, yes, I will acknowledge it. I've done it with my sponsor, and I also have a sponsee that we exchange food plans with a lot of the time. And so I'll acknowledge it with her, and I'll say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to eliminate this because it's just not. And then after I've acknowledged that and I put it on there, if I return to that and I know that that's something that I'm, it's not good for me, and that's something, then yeah, I would go back to step one after, you know, after I've put it on my list of foods that trigger my binging or things that I'm powerless over, or now that I'm well aware and I know, yes, then I would. There are definitely some foods that I absolutely know that if I return to them, then absolutely. There's definitely black and white. There's no gray there. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Alexis. Nisha, your turn.
This is my second day in the program, and I was curious about your finding a sponsor and how you found one that was a good fit for you. If you could talk about that, please.
Sure. I think that, you know, I was listening to A Vision for You, and there were a couple of people who were sharing that I really, you know, they rang my bell. I could really relate to how they shared. And so if you're listening and you hear someone that you relate to the way they talk and how they share, and it just speaks to you, then, you know, give a call. We have the phone list, and that's what I did. I just called, and she happened to have an opening, and I was able to get a sponsor that way. But I also want to reiterate just what I said in the beginning, that, I mean, it isn't so much, well, you do need to have like some, you have to be able to relate a little bit. So, you know, that is important, and your schedules and everything to get that going. But it isn't so much about that we have to be alike or anything. And I know you didn't say that, but I just, that was something that I had to realize, is that me and my sponsor don't really have to have anything in common except for this disease and a common solution. And that was something that I really had to realize, that, you know, my sponsor is single and doesn't have children, and I have been married twice and have three children and two stepchildren. And so there was no similarities as far as lifestyles, none, and there still isn't, but it has definitely worked because she just carried the solution to me and also wanted me to rely on a higher power, so encouraged that more than relying on her. But so anyway, to get back to your question, sorry, I got it by just reaching out, but there's also the after meeting where people will volunteer on weekdays, or people will volunteer and say that they're available to sponsor. And you can also say, I'm looking for a sponsor on the after meeting, Monday through Friday.
Thank you, Nisha, for the question. Anyone else with questions this morning? Star 1 to unmute.
Yeah. I have a question.
Yes, and your name?
Anne.
Go ahead.
Hi. I was when things during the day, do you call your sponsor only or text, or do you talk to other recovered sponsors?
I'm really sorry. I didn't hear the beginning of the question.
I'm sorry. How do you work the 10-step?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. The 10-step, yeah, I have a group of, I have a handful, or, you know, I've been lucky that way. I have a lot of recovered people. So as far as the 10th step, I don't even really use my sponsor for that, actually. I just have a lot of other people that I've established relationships with, and or I do it inside, depending on, meaning me and God, depending on the, you know, the intensity of the situation or whatever. But as I'm doing that inventory, and actually I'll just share real quickly, my husband and I had gotten into a practice a little bit in the past year where we were doing daily inventories with each other. That was a very cool experience. We were going through the questions in the book and being accountable to each other. I've done it in multiple different ways. I've done it in a group setting. I've done it over the phone with different women. I've done it, now I'm just doing it. Me and my husband will do it every once in a while now, but now I'm just doing it again. Like, I'll make a phone call and reach out if I need to bounce it off someone and have them help me inventory it. Or, you know, there's other ones, like right now when I'm, you know, in with my sister and things, where as things come up, I can kind of inventory them with myself and God, or come and write them down, come up in my room and write it out. So that's how I practice 10 right now.
Thank you, Anne, for the question. And thank you to all who posed questions this morning, Santa, Rasha, Patty, Nan, Alexis, Nishia, thank you all. And, of course, thank you, Stacy, for that message of hope and possibility this morning as a result of these steps. We thank you for your time and your story of transformation. And I'm going to close a vision for you this morning in the way that we always close our meetings, and that's from the page 164 from a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.